Joining us now are two people who represent different sides, different policy positions on whether felons should vote. Kara Gotch is an advocacy director for the Sentencing Project, and David Mulhausen is a senior policy analyst with the Heritage Foundation. Thanks for coming on, both of you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
So, Kara, your organization has made this a big part of your 2008 efforts. And how do felon voting laws vary from state to state?
Well, it's quite a patchwork. You have states like Maine and Vermont, which allow people who are incarcerated in prison to vote. And then you have states like Virginia and Kentucky, which have lifetime bans on anyone with a felony conviction from voting, even once they've completed their sentence. The rest of the states and the District of Columbia fall in between, from states that disenfranchise while incarcerated but restore automatically once someone's released from prison, to other states that restore after completion of parole or probation, to some states that also have waiting periods for people. Even once they've completed their sentence, they must wait a set period of time before they can apply to get their voting rights back.
And what kind of resources are available? We just talked with Edward Grijalva, who got his voting rights restored, but it sounds like it wasn't easy, and he did have help. What kind of resources are there in states where they have more strict felony voting laws?
Unfortunately, there aren't a lot of resources. One of the biggest problems we see is the lack of information among people who are disenfranchised or people with felony convictions, and even among state election officials. The ACLU and the Brennan Center just recently released a report on de facto disenfranchisement, where they actually conducted surveys of Board of Election officials asking them what the voting rights laws were for people with felony convictions. And there are many circumstances where the state officials don't even know that someone with a felony conviction can vote in that state, that they can vote once they're released from prison and not have to wait till the completion of their parole and probation. There needs to be serious notification of people who are with felony convictions to let them know what their rights are, and that unfortunately is not happening nationwide.
All right, David, what's your basic position or thought about whether or not felons should not be allowed to vote and for how long?
Well, I think that it needs to be decided on a state-by-state basis. And because, you know, felon disenfranchisement is part of a sanction for committing serious crimes. And every state has a method for felons to restore their voting rights.
What in general do you see as the value of delaying or preventing former felons from voting? I mean, if you see it as something that has some value in some states, what is that value?
Well, those convicted of certain felonies are less trustworthy. You know, for instance, we also deny felons their Second Amendment rights.
There was a professor from Johns Hopkins who runs a sex offender study group researching sex offenders. And obviously that's a very controversial issue where many smart people have differences of opinions. But what he found was that people who had more trouble, for example, finding an apartment because of their sex offender status, were actually more likely to go into recidivism because they felt like they didn't really have a stake in society, as opposed to people who were able to reintegrate. Do you think there could be a boomerang effect where felons who don't vote actually feel less invested in American society?
I doubt that, because traditionally felons have not been concerned with the civil rights of others. That's how they became felons in the first place.
Kara, what do you think about that argument?
Well, first of all, I know there has been research done looking at rearrest rates among people with previous convictions and their voting practices. And we do see reduced rates of recidivism among people who do vote who have previous conviction records. I do think it's essential that we allow people with felony convictions to vote, particularly people who live in our community. 5.3 million people in this country cannot vote because of a felony conviction, and 4 million of those people are living in our communities. They're neighbors, they're, you know, friends and family members. And we are doing a disservice to them, to their families, and to the entire community if we choose to stigmatize them and ostracize them from the rest of society. It is to everyone's benefit to have people with felony convictions engaged in their civic life and contributing part of the community. It's a responsibility to vote. That is a good behavior that I think really should be encouraged rather than discouraged.
Kara, you're working directly to try to get some laws changed, and you have seen some laws change. What are the trends in that?
Well, there's been a lot of success over the last year, and it's very the last 11 years, actually, and it's very encouraging. Last year, Governor Martin O'Malley of Maryland signed a law that restored voting rights to 52,000 people in the state of Maryland who have felony convictions and were previously disenfranchised. That state no longer disenfranchises people after the completion of their sentence. It automatically restores voting rights once an individual completes their sentence. In the state of Florida last year, Governor Charlie Crist changed their rules for nonviolent offenses, for people with nonviolent offenses who've completed sentence and have expedited the application process. In the last year, that state has reenfranchised over 100,000 people with felony convictions, and that's a really significant number, I think, particularly in such a short period of time. States like Rhode Island, which previously barred people on parole and probation from voting in 2006, there was a ballot measure where the voting public voted to restore voting rights to people with felony conviction, people on parole and probation, and 15,000 people gained their right to vote there. We're seeing in other states, like in Louisiana, just this year, Governor Jindal passed a notification bill, signed a notification bill that will let people know what indeed their right to vote is, and notify them once they can vote.
David, you mentioned that from your perspective, this is something that should be decided by the states. But hearing that many states are relaxing these laws, do you think that there should be legal challenges of any form to how the states are changing their laws?
Well, I think the states need to decide it for themselves. I think the federal government needs to stay out of it. This is a policy area that's reserved to the states by the 14th Amendment. So there may be debates within states, and I would encourage people to oppose loosening the standards, but I would also add that there should always be some fair set of guidelines for how a felon can get his or her voting rights restored on a case-by-case basis.
Do you know of any organizations that are actively working to lobby in cases where the laws are potentially changing?
Not off the top of my head.
What about the racial aspect? And I'm going to ask you first, David. The laws tend to be harsher in the Deep South, and many of the felony laws were developed between Reconstruction and Jim Crow during times of enfranchisement of African Americans. And it wasn't just about the laws that govern whether or not people could vote who were felons. It's also about what constituted a felony and how many people were deemed to be felons. Do you see a racial footprint in these laws?
Well, I would say that in the past, some of these laws have been unjust, but today, these laws are race neutral. You have to commit a serious offense before you get your voting rights taken away. So it's not like these laws are passed on the basis of someone's race. They're passed on crimes committed. And unfortunately, too many minorities commit crimes that fall under this area.
Kara, what do you see as racial impact?
Well, undeniably, there is a racial disparity in who is disenfranchised and who is not. 1.4 million African-American men in this country cannot vote. They are disenfranchised. That's 13% of all African-American men. Now, that's a large percentage of that population, and I think it's important to think about what that means for those communities, for African-American communities. Their voice is muted because they don't have full participation in the voting process. And I think that is undeniably a problem and something that we need to be concerned about.
Okay, Kara, if you were convicted in a state where it's difficult to become a voter again, but you move to another state that has different laws, whose laws apply?
You know, it differs from state to state. So it's hard, you know, there's no sort of universal rule. You know, some states you would assume that you move there and you are subject to the law of that state, but many states say no, it depends on what the previous state, the state of your conviction is from. So it's very confusing and complicated. You know, a federal bill actually was just recently introduced last month that hopes to sort of do some unification of these laws because it is very confusing and there is not consistency across the states. It applies only to federal elections, only to elections for federal office, and it would restore voting rights once an individual is released into the community and allow individuals to vote in federal elections.
David, when you think about this issue, there are so many things going on that have to do with the Supreme Court ruling over voter challenges, essentially, to the voter rolls and ACORN and investigations. How important is this felony voting issue? Is this something that you find important or, in the big picture, not a big deal?
Well, I think it's important, but I would also like to add that, you know, felony disenfranchisement prevents the diluting of votes in poor minority communities, because what happens is that the votes of the only people who are allowed to vote are law-abiding citizens. So I think there's a benefit there that we're sort of missing.
Well, on that note, David, Kara, thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you.
That was David Mulhausen, Senior Policy Analyst with the Heritage Foundation, and Kara Gotch, the Advocacy Director for the Sentencing Project. She joined us from our headquarters in Washington, D.C.